This is FCB Radio, where real talk lives. Visit us online at fcbradio.com.
Todd Allen Radio, turn your speakers up, let's go.
Hello, folks, and welcome. You're listening to The Todd Allen Show. I'm your host, Professor Econ Todd Allen, in studio with, back from worlds unbeknownst to us on assignment, Khalid Namar. How are you, Khalid?
I am well. Glad to be back.
You sound like you have a cold. You don't have the Wu-Tang flu, do you?
That's some racist stuff.
Welcome back. Darvio Kingpin Morrow, how you doing?
Why you go to me after you say something like that? The Wu-Tang.
It's Wu-San.
I know what it is, man. Come on now.
Wu-Tang gang ain't nothing Wu-Tang to mess with.
Right. Because we all know. We all cash rules everything around me.
Kring, get the money.
Dollar bill, y'all.
I think I'm going to use. I'm going to find a place in this show to use that instrumental.
I haven't seen you in a month, literally.
That's right. You were.
I'm sorry. To be able to use the vernacular of many of our listeners, literally.
Yeah, it's been a minute.
Yeah. So how are you? I almost forgot what you look like. And looking at you now, I wish I had.
You just had all these insults just building up.
I missed him.
It was he was writing them on the plane back to Columbia.
Laughing to himself, like, oh, this is so good.
Right. Yeah, that is funny because I do laugh at my own.
Hey, but since you brought that up, I have just a curious question for both of y'all. What do y'all think about the hysteria with the Wuhan and the coronavirus? Is it legit? Like, is it something we should all be freaked out about?
I don't drink, so I don't have an opinion on it.
Wow. Coronavirus, I get that.
Do you think, Todd?
Is it serious? Is it something we should be like freaked out about, or is this just a national panic?
Well, I have to be careful when I talk about this because it's been said to me that sometimes when I wax professorial that I use big words. So let me be as concise as I can. The challenge with this particular pandemic, it's a pandemic now. Instead of an epidemic, it's called a pandemic because it has moved beyond one country. So it's multiple countries, so it becomes pandemic. The challenge with it is the percentage of people who contract the illness and then die. So if you look at the flu, the normal flu that we get, many people get it, it's less than, say, 1% of people who contract it die. With the number of people who have contracted this particular strain of the coronavirus, I think the death rate is about 2%, which makes it troublesome because there is no known vaccine for it. Regardless of what you read on the Lysol can, which talks about the coronavirus, this is a different strain. And so,
what's the conspiracy theory with that, with the Lysol can or something, that people were saying that the government created a coronavirus or something crazy like that?
What government?
This government. Yeah.
You know what? You know where they're saying it comes from? Eating
bat soup. Midnight duck soup, yeah. Which would be bat soup. They say
basically, and all sorts of other things.
Well, they said it came from the wet district of Wuhan.
The wet markets.
The wet markets in Wuhan. So, I mean, that, you know, anytime that, you know, again, based upon my belief system, anytime that you're eating something that's not necessarily kosher, in a sense, that you can run the risk of these things happening. But the thing with this is now that it's transmittable from human to human. And then that makes it, and in a country like China, where you have over 1 billion people, that becomes somewhat problematic. And if you don't have the necessary measures in for vaccinations and or being able to control the spread of it, it becomes troublesome. So a lot of people criticized our government when they wanted to issue a travel ban from individuals coming from China, that they wanted to basically put them in quarantine, because I think that it has a 14-day gestation period. Do you guys recall that?
I don't.
Okay, so you can't verify what I'm saying.
No, I think this. Yeah, no. I think they said it's 2 weeks, right? You said 14 days?
About four, yeah.
I thought you said something else.
Okay.
Yeah, 14 days is 2 weeks.
Come no, on. But I didn't quite hear that part of it.
I'm using new math.
That Common Core math.
That Common Core math.
Yeah, right. I didn't quite hear that part of it.
Yeah, 14-day gestation period. So it becomes problematic. But here's the thing, too. When you have, like, the CDC or when you have these kinds of things which are happening in other countries, I believe that our governments, especially from an international perspective, the most important thing is that you have to protect the American people. And so if you're going to shut down your borders – but here's the thing. You didn't hear any complaints from Democrats who don't want the wall in terms of, hey, we're going to shut down, we're going to quarantine some of the people that are coming from these other
– Yeah, I know.
You know.
I know. I mean,
the hypocrisy is –
It's schizophrenic,
you know,
man.
Yeah. So – I don't know. Do you guys plan on traveling to Asia anytime soon?
I don't.
No.
So, we'll see. I mean, it is scary though. It is scary because you have instances where people are relatively healthy and they succumb to this particular illness. So.
There's no cure for it, right?
At the moment, no.
Well, there is treatments for it that have been developed. The Philippines have put something together to sort of stem the flow of it. They've got some antiviral cocktail they put together over there. So there is a way to treat it to kind of slow it down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean they put together. What's interesting though is that in China they built a hospital in 10 days. I thought that was kind of amazing.
Our military has done that. Well, in doing the Ebola outbreak, they did it in West Africa. They built hospitals.
Wow.
How are they able to just – well, I mean, they don't have to deal with union labor, but
– Well, we do have some communities that raise barns in like 3 days, so I don't know if they ship those people over.
Yeah, military can – they actually awful. Build some – I'll say this. They didn't necessarily build, quote, hospitals per se, but they did build these medical facilities where people were quarantined. And able to be treated, so they weren't like full. I don't know
or something like that. Yeah, yeah. So
you're just going to ignore that awful comment that he just made.
I am. So
there are certain people that have skill sets that can be incorporated to do these kinds of things. I don't understand what the problem is. Okay,
continue, moving
right along.
Continue.
A lot has been happening other than that, and politically speaking, we have been over the past several weeks. This has just been exhausting. Over the past several months, it's just been exhausting. So,
remember, it used to be the news week. Now it's like the news hour.
But I think that this is – I'm glad – I'm not glad this happened, but I think that I'm happy this happened to the Democrats because they have put so much into this this destruction campaign over the last couple of years. Now they're exhausted. They're out of ideas. They have no real ideas.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about that because I have an idea that I want to or a concept that I want to present to you guys when we are talking about the impeachment inquiry and then ultimately the impeachment. What I'd like to do is to start with the State of the Union address. As our listeners know, that the president had the State of the Union address earlier this week, and a lot of things were taking place at the very beginning when he handed copies of his speech to. Nancy Pelosi, she extended the right hand of fellowship, as they would say. And I don't know if the president didn't see it, dismissed it, or what, but he didn't shake her hand, and he handed her the State of the Union address, and then he proceeded to give the address. Darvio, what do you think of the president's addressing the nation and the State of the Union?
So, and we only got a couple minutes left, so we can carry this on in the other segment. So, obviously, I thought him and Nancy, their interaction with each other was like two children. Him not shaking her hand was childish, and her ripping up the throwing a temper tantrum after the speech was over was very childish. But as far as the content of the speech itself, to be 100% honest, it was one of the best speeches I've ever heard him give. He stayed on message. He stayed on topic. He did everything that you're supposed that one of these speeches are supposed to be in a re-election campaign. You're supposed to tout your accomplishments. You're supposed to set your vision for the future. You're supposed to talk about what you want to do in a second term. I thought it was one of the best speeches I've heard.
So you mean he's maturing as a commander in chief and as a president?
I don't know about that, but he like you say, he read good that day. If he can show any discipline at all, it would be a positive.
I mean, let's give the president credit. I mean, we here at the Todd Allen Show, when he's not doing well, we'll be critical of him, and when he does well, you know, we'll say so. But I believe that this speech did show some maturity.
And then the very next day, he was cussing from the podium.
Well, listen, please hear me. The speech that he gave during the State of the Union showed maturity.
I will give you that. It was the best speech I've ever heard him give.
Yeah, I mean, look, squirrel, right? Khalid, what were your thoughts? How much time?
And we got 30 seconds, so make it quick, and then we can pick it back up.
I thought it was a good speech from. I didn't hear all of it, but I heard probably half of it.
It was very long.
Yeah, I heard very half of it.
It was 80 minutes.
Yeah, I think he can do a lot better if he really wants to. I mean, if he gets rid of his defensiveness and doesn't always have to hit back at other people, you know, his poll numbers will be up 25%.
Well, in that regard, we'll talk about that when we come back. You're listening to The Todd Allen Show.
The Todd Allen Show. Show.
I'm Kira Davis, host of the Just Listen to Yourself podcast, and that's the podcast where I ask you to take your talking points on your favorite hot-button issues of the day and draw them out to their logical conclusion. And that's available right here on the FCB Radio Network.
The Todd Allen Show.
Welcome back, folks. Khalid, how can our listeners follow you?
Khalid Namar on Facebook and Khalid Namar on Twitter.
Darby.
D.D. Kingpin on all social media platforms, including TikTok now. D-T-H-E-K-I-N-G-P-I-N.
And folks, you can follow us on Facebook, The Todd Allen Show. That is A-L-L-Y-N. And you can follow me on Instagram, Todd_Allen, A-L-L-Y-N. Khalid, before the break, you were talking about your assessment of the State of the Union address.
Yeah, I thought it was a pretty good speech. It hit a lot of hot button points, and it also it was uplifting. Mm-hmm. It was optimistic. It also made the Democrats squirm like kids in science class. They're sitting there moping and slouching in their seats. I'm sorry. They are a very immature group of people. I mean, immature. They're sitting there slouching. They didn't clap for anything he said. Even when he talked about a woman going to outer space, they didn't move. It's like they are so childish and so full of hate that they hate him more than they actually care about the people who they claim to care about.
Right.
So they sat there to show you no emotion. Nothing he said was worthy of them going, okay, yeah, that's good. You know, there are a bunch of high school kids. I'm sorry. And I, you know what? I wish, you know what my favorite moment from 2016 was? Watching Hillary supporters crying, looking at the election returns like they were watching a plane crash. That was awesome.
Wow.
You're a terrible person.
You know why? Because these people were so sure that they were going to win.
Yeah.
And then when it all came, you know, to a disappointing end, they sat there and they cried. I would never cry at an election. These people were crying like they were at a funeral.
Well, when your politics or your religion,
yeah,
it becomes very emotional. And
Darla, would you cry?
No. No.
They were crying. You thought somebody had died.
Well, it's like your sports team. I mean, when they talk about fans, that's short for fanatic, right? So when they're fanatical about their sports team, if their team loses a Super Bowl, you know, they cry. It's a sad moment. But one of the things I wanted to talk about, and you mentioned briefly before the break, about whether or not he is matured as president, especially during this particular speech. I think that this speech kind of reflects that after all of the firestorm that has taken place at this particular point, that should he win the 2020 election and this becomes his lame duck years, his lame duck years, he can pretty much follow the plan that he had outlined in the State of the Union
address. If they get the House. If they don't get the House,
he can't do ish. Yeah, that is true.
Yeah.
But I think that this kind of reflected, and the question becomes, are his coattails big enough to carry the House in 2020?
Well, they're going to have to do a lot better with white suburban women in order to make that happen. Because their poor showing among white suburban women is why they lost the House in 2018 in the first place. So they're going to have to do better among white suburban women, which typically before the Trump era were Republican voters.
Yeah.
So they got to win some of them back. They ain't going to win all of them back.
There's a trade-off? What if they increase the number of black votes and they swap white suburban women for black males?
They're not going to win the black male vote by large enough numbers in order to pull that off. I think they're going to see an increase. I mean, the thing that's underreported about the 2016 election is that Trump won 16% of black male voters. His 8% of the black vote overall is because he lost an overwhelming majority of black women, but he won 16% of black men, which is actually pretty good.
Well, I think
for a Republican candidate for president,
I
expect that will probably go up a little bit.
I think it's going to be like between 20-25% of black male vote.
I would say 20. I would say 20. I think he has a good chance of getting 20% of black men, which would be something that Republicans haven't done since like the 70s.
Well, I tell you what, I think it's a possibility because of so much has been going on. See, here's what I think is pretty disturbing. These people, and I'm saying these people, the delusioned Trump haters who can't even admit when he actually does something, they say, oh, well, he didn't do anything. It's like,
or they want to give it to Obama.
Yeah. Versus he permanently funded black colleges. It is in the
back. Absolutely.
Yeah. Right.
Absolutely.
Now,
I got to give
he
him
did that. But guess what? Yeah. People are saying, like Sunny Hostin, who is the most spectacularly unimpressive lawyer on television. She's only on TV because she's attractive, like most of some of these knucklehead women.
wow.
The views and opinions of Khalid Namar. Here's his alone.
Yes. Yeah, we better
if you want to get in contact with him, hit him up at Khalid Namar, KHALIDNAMA.
On all social media.
And I'm going to tweet that comment later.
You can deal with the backlash for that.
Yes.
You're going to get canceled.
Right.
You're not, you know, she says, or he has done nothing for the black community. I mean, okay, that is just pure ignorance,
it's false.
Delusion, and hatred.
It's false.
And it's false.
And you don't have to, and here's the thing, and you know I'm saying this all the time, and I've said this multiple times on this show. You don't have to like the guy to give him credit when he does right. I personally believe that it is important to be intellectually honest and to stick to your core values and principles no matter who is in office. So if this president does something that I agree with, I give him credit for it. Because it's important to me, it's important to be intellectually honest.
The challenge with that statement that you made is the first two words that you used, intellectually honest. The reason why that's a problem is because many people who argue against the policies or against the things that this person does, it's not an intellectual argument.
It's an emotional argument. Correct. You're absolutely right.
And so that's the problem.
Very good point.
Many people don't like this president because he elicits some sort of emotional response.
And it doesn't matter what he does. And that, I just can't, that's not okay to me. Like if you, here's the thing. If you care about black people and you say you care about black people and you don't want to give him credit for the First Step Act, you don't want to give him credit for opportunity zones, you don't want to give him credit for funding HBCUs, then you don't care about black people.
But here's the thing.
Their hatred supersedes any care they
well,
have.
Well, see, I'm going to be a little bit more positive. It's not the hatred that they have for the black for the hatred that they have against Donald Trump. It's the money they receive from the Democratic Party, because they love money more than they hate Donald Trump.
Yeah, but
you're talking about professional politicos. Khalid and I are talking about professional politicos and the average
television pundits.
Well, let's talk about that. The television pundits are being paid by whom? The CNNs, MSNBCs of the world, and they have a bias.
So
they're only going to have people on their shows.
Here's the thing. I'm sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, Khalid, but here's the thing.
Yes, he did. He did it on purpose.
No, the only when I don't do it on purpose is when I acknowledge it. Like I didn't mean to do that. But here's the thing. They don't get that excuse because Van Jones gets paid by CNN too, and he will give Trump credit when credit is due. He worked with the Trump administration to get the First Step Act passed.
These people will hate for free.
And he's a he's a hardcore Democrat.
He said they will hate for free.
You see with signs on the side of the highway.
We'll hate for free.
I mean, this is what they feel. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm talking about The View. Sonny Hostin is the, quote, legal analyst on The View, right?
Did you say?
That's what I said, legal analyst.
I thought.
on The View. Angrily, he hasn't done anything. In other words, everything that he does is glass a third full. You're not even half.
Right.
Because
but that's playing to their base.
Well, and
too.
I told people.
Well, these people are.
Well,
yes.
I don't even think they're thinking like that, though. I think
they're haters.
They view it like that.
They're
and to
haters.
Me, I told somebody, you don't have to go out and get a MAGA hat. Like it doesn't mean like it's not going to kill you to give him credit for something that he did that you agree with.
Yeah, but see, here's the thing, though.
You have to be able to separate the two.
When they hate,
I'm still
so
not
much.
Crazy. I'm still not crazy about everything he says and does.
Listen.
But when he does something I agree with, like I think it's intellectually dishonest.
Well,
To not
ask
say,
yourself this question.
You know what I mean?
8 years of the Obama administration did not yield funding for black colleges. It yielded almost
not permanent. Yeah,
it almost yielded lawsuits from black colleges because they were about to sue his Department of Education for changing student loan parameters. That's a fact that was underreported. He took vouchers out of the DC school program, vouchers out of the DC school budget. You know that, right? That's a fact.
Yeah, I was in DC when that was going on.
But see, all that stuff is underreported. Put it this way: these opportunity zones that are working their way through the system, he had 8 years to do something like that. He didn't do it.
And that's the thing.
I can tell you that stuff is working.
But that's when
we talk about urban cities all around America.
We talk about real money. We talked about how Trump is basically putting real money behind these programs. He put real money behind the HBCUs. He's putting real money behind prison reform. He put real money behind school choice. He put real money behind opportunity zones.
And can I say something about the criminal justice reform real quick, Todd?
Yeah.
Because there's a debate over, well, how much Trump had to do with that getting passed. So, no, he didn't write it. That's not how this works most of the time.
He doesn't, yeah.
But had Trump not supported that bill, it does not get passed. And the reason, and Van Jones said this. This came out of Van Jones's mouth. He said because Trump supporting it was key to getting the police to support it. And the police supporting it was key to getting Republicans to support it. So that is the reason. Had Trump not supported the First Step Act, it would not have been passed. There would not have been enough Republican votes to pass.
But let's go back.
That is a fact.
But let's go back a little bit to talk about why this prison reform was needed. The Democratic Party was the one that came up
bill.
With
the 1993. People
that was the three strikes bill.
People in the media were shocked. Oh, why is the black turnout so low for Hillary Clinton in 2016? Well, because people know that the Clinton crime bill was the one that put all these black people in jail.
But you know what? I don't blame him for it because he didn't write that either. He signed it because his black Democrat base, including the Congressional Black Caucus, put it in front of him. Why would he? He had to sign it. Because there was so much violence going on, these people had to come up with this legislation, and he was going to sign it with Charlie Rangel standing next to him and all these other people. Some black mayors supported it. And these people who were involved in it in the Congressional Black Caucus were
the views and opinions
were consistently. They were consistently reelected for the next 20 years.
Right.
Some of them are still there.
With 20% turnout.
But they're still elected, though. They're still there.
Like people have to realize that, too. Like
Charlie Rangel,
like, turnout in America in general is low, but in the black community, it's very low.
But see, all of that is consistent with what black Democrats have done in the past as well. It was the black Democrats that were part of the eugenics program that was actually instituted by Margaret Sanger. And so now what do you have? You have more black babies being killed in New York City than we have in birth as far as birth rate is concerned. Right. So having black Democrats support a bill that is anti-black community is nothing new. It is absolutely nothing new.
Well, my point was that the president doesn't write legislation. I mean, he signed it. He signed it, and he put it this way. This is Bill Clinton in the
first black president
in the 90s with a rabid black base and a congressional black caucus pushing him to sign it.
We'll be right back, folks. You're listening to The Todd Allen Show.
The Todd Allen Show.
The iHeartRadio app is
everything all in one.
I'm in that app every day. Freeze what I'm down with.
My stuff. Radio, podcast, and music.
While I love it from my radio, from my stations and all that, it really has become my go-to for podcasts to binge.
I tell you what, if you aren't in a podcast yet, you're missing out.
I love this app. One app, one place.
The iHeartRadio app. Radio, music, podcasts, all free. Free never sounded better. Download the iHeartRadio app today.
The Todd Allen Show.
Welcome back, folks. Now, this is the part of the Todd Allen Show where we go to really.
You know what? You all are just like, you all like, what? You can't rush an artist.
Well, he went J.J. Evans on
an artiste.
I mean, you know.
You don't have it pulled up yet?
I'm getting there. It takes time for me to sometimes, I have to work my way into these things. And you all just like to just throw me out there like that. I mean, did you think they rushed Beethoven?
So now you're Beethoven? It's like this is a Picasso,
right?
I mean, it's just like, you just. So let me just explain something, folks. Here we are in the studio, and Darvio waves his finger, but he has control of the buttons. So he has control of the buttons. So basically, he just like. Puts us back on the air, and sometimes we don't even know it. And I'm afraid I'm going to say something one day, and it's going to be like, oh, my God, what did I just say?
Todd Allen Show After Dark.
Yeah.
That's what we got bleeps for. That's what we have 7-second delays. You'll be good.
Okay.
Are you ready now?
Are you sure?
No, I'm not.
All right. So while he's looking for that, Darvio, why don't you tell our listeners where they can find our show?
All right, so you can listen to this show Sunday nights at 9 p.m. on AM 1420, The Answer, and 102.5 FM in the city of Cleveland. You can also listen to this show in podcast form online at iHeartRadio, Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Just type in The Todd Allen Show, TODDALLYN Show, and make sure that you click that subscribe button.
And this month, at the beginning of this month, because you posted on Facebook how January was such a biggest
month for downloads in this network. We are actually approaching a milestone number. I will reveal that at a later time. I'm thinking about throwing a party for it, and Khalid is going to buy cran apple juice, cran orange juice.
No, get it right.
Cran orange juice.
No.
What is it?
It's cranberry and pineapple juice.
Cranberry and pineapple juice for everyone.
For everybody.
and so it was during this month that we were listed as the top 100.
One of the top 150 political shows on iHeartRadio. So people like listening to you reprobates.
Okay. I found the story.
I'm exhausted.
All right. There you go.
Okay. Now, folks, we're going back to really.
Really.
Okay. So every week, folks, we bring you stories that just show you how utterly insane the left is. They're absolutely race-obsessed, insane, delusional, demented human beings. Some of them are nice people.
Wow.
Wow.
They have nice people on both sides.
Now, I want you to follow this story. This is from New York Post, among others that cover this. White women paying $2,500 for a dinner to learn how they're racist. You heard about this, Darvio?
I did. Where do we sign up?
Liberal white women are paying a steep price to, quote, smash their white fragility with dinners to learn how they're racist. This is such a hustle. Oh, my God.
So who do they pay?
Listen, this I'm going to tell you. Regina Jackson, who is black, that gives you a hint. And Sierra Ryle, who is Indian American, have been hosting $2,500 quote race to dinner events with Caucasian women.
Race to dinner.
Yeah, bring your checkbooks. events with Caucasian women attendees intent on having their subconscious racism challenged. So far, they've had 15 dinners. Todd, do the math on that. $1,500 times $2,500.
I thought you said $2,500.
$2,500 times 15. The dinner, they have 15 dinners.
Okay.
In big cities across the U.S., including Denver, since spring of 2019.
So, wait a minute. They've had 15 dinners, but they call it big cities.
At $2,500. At large cities. They've had them in big cities.
That's $37,500.
Now.
Good Lord.
Now, that just, if one person attended a dinner, now, that's $2,500 a plate. So imagine if they had 10 people at each dinner, or you know what I'm saying?
Can
so
we set up one of these?
I would love to. Think about it, they have average of 5 people at each dinner.
Right.
$2,500 a pop.
Hold on, we're about to do that.
That's okay.
We're going to do that had right now.
Five people times
how much a plate?
$2,500.
$2,500. How many
12,
events?
19. Well, they had 19 events.
That's yes. $237,000.
Okay, so they've had 19 events and 15 people at each event.
I'm just saying,
if we just say five people are at each event,
yeah,
and they did 19, that's they made $237,500.
Well, there's a great quote by a philosopher that I forget, but he said that a sucker is born every minute.
P.T. Barnum.
All right.
white guilt pays.
We should set something up like that. I mean, shouldn't we have like a monthly person come
the
in.
Todd Allen Show's White Guilt Expo.
Yeah. There's money in white guilt. I knew it, but I didn't know how much. This is unbelievable. If you did this in conference room, they leave, Raul tells The Guardian. But wealthy white women have been taught never to leave the dinner table. Aha. Aha. The dinners are 2 hours long with 8 to 10 white women as guests. That gives you an idea.
Oh, my God. Hold on. We got to do that math again.
Yes.
You said 8 to 10?
8 to 10.
All right. So let's just go 8. How much is it a plate again?
$2,500.
$2,500 times 19 events?
Yep.
That's
$380,000.
Oh, my God.
Well, how much are the dinners?
Boy.
You in the wrong business.
If you have a $2,500 plate, that's like a 5, 6, 7 course meal. You can't just have Big Mac.
But you know they ain't spending all. You know they ain't spending all that money on the plate.
Or the fee is now says this, and sometimes a full $2,500 price tag for the evening, or the fee is divided among the guests. So I guess they come up and collectively put it. It doesn't matter. They paying big money.
So there's $2,500 total.
Yeah. Okay, sometimes they said.
Oh, so okay. So sometimes it's $2,500 total. Sometimes it's $2,500 per person.
It depends on how many people there is. Yeah, white My men goodness. And Trump voters are not invited. As Jackson and Ryle perceive them to be lost causes.
I have so many questions.
This is quote: white men are never going to change anything. If they were, they would have done it by now. Jackson says, adding they focus on liberal white women because they are the guiltiest, because they feel they can actually influence them, of course, because a lot of them are weak. Those women, in turn, will likely go to influence their own circles. See, this is disgusting. And for those people who allow themselves to be, you deserve to pay $2,500, probably more than that. If they don't hold these positions themselves, the white men in power are often their family, friends, and partners, says Jackson. There's also required reading before attending a dinner, including White Fragility by Robin DiAngelo that postulates everyone has moments of racism in their lives. White Fragility is a book. They have a book title, book cover here. White Fragility, Why It's So Hard for White People to Talk About Racism by Robin DiAngelo. I don't even want to promote this book. At a recent dinner, which featured Carbonara women went around and shared racist thoughts and actions, however subconscious they recently had.
So this is Racist Anonymous?
What is Carbonara?
I don't know.
I want to hire people of color.
I have to ask Siri.
Not because I want to be a white savior. I have explored my need for validation. I'm working through that. Yeah, I'm struggling, said the night's host, Jess Campbell Swanson. The dinners are a starting point, according to Race to Dinner, to Dinner's About section. Oh, he had a website. Okay. A place to start thinking through how you actively hold white supremacy every minute of every day.
I have so many questions. First of all, to say that, like, the thing about white men and Trump voters, that was ridiculous, because if you believe that, that means that you subscribe to someone being a racist or not being a racist based on who they vote for.
Right.
Which is not true. There are racist Democrats and racist Republicans.
Right.
Like, that has no bearing on on how you feel about black people.
Right.
The second thing is, this is just so... Does anybody really think that using this approach like this is going to make a damn difference at all? You're gonna you'll play to their guilt,
and you'll make a lot of damn money,
and you'll make a lot of money, and they'll feel like they're doing something, and then they'll go on their merry way. The thing is, everybody always looks for a shortcut on the answer to answer the questions.
But it always
of race.
Comes down to shaking down whitey for money. Am I lying?
Right. Well, everybody, yeah.
Some
yeah,
people would ask, why did Jesse James rob banks?
No.
Because that's where the money was.
That's where the money
was. It was Willie Sutton.
But here's but here's the thing. This is not how you change hearts and minds. Like, no. If you really want, like, the having the conversations, real conversations on race is real hard work. This is not hard work. This is ridiculous.
Can I just say this real quick?
Go ahead.
I don't like the finger wagging that a lot of black people do at other people, as if we don't have issues with other people.
There's prejudice black people.
Let me take white people out the mix. What you have right now, a wave of anti-Semitic attacks that was going on in New York City that the mainstream media hasn't been covering, and they've been almost exclusively by blacks beating up Jews in New York City. Asian people were not only beaten up in schools around the country, just in recent years, they were robbed, targeted for home invasions in 13 cities that I counted, because there was a rapper, YG, you know him, right, Darby? Mm-hmm. He wrote a rap like about how to rob Asian people,
which is foul,
and was protesting when he went to Philly. I was in Mexico years ago, part of a travel group. I didn't know these people, but we were part of the same travel group. I watched these people, black people, totally disrespect these people in their own country. It was so disgusting. In Mexico, at the airports, they were totally condescending. When I was at Tuskegee, we had foreign students from Central America, part of agricultural program. I watched people totally disrespect them in the cafeterias and everything, just for standing in line to get food like everybody else.
The bottom line is this, and we got to go to break.
It's a human thing.
That's what I was about to say. The bottom line is this. The issues of race are complicated, and they're complex, and you don't deal with all of those things in one night with a $2,500 dinner.
Well, it's a good start. It's a lot of money, man.
We'll be right back. You're listening to the Todd Allen Show.
The Todd Allen Show. Show. The Todd Allen Show.
Welcome back, folks. We're going to continue on with the conversation of the really segment that we just had in the last segment, because this is nothing short of extraordinary. Here it is that you have black people.
A black woman and an Indian woman.
Who are predators, in a word.
That's a very nice word.
Con artists? Well, they're taking advantage of individuals by playing on their psychological guilt for being white, but this is race politics at its finest, and they're taking advantage of individuals who obviously have And this is something that
this is beyond race politics.
Well,
this
it is, but this is
this
something,
is abuse.
But this is something I don't understand. Low self esteem is just as something that I don't quite get. Well, I know it exists.
Well, listen,
I know it when I see it, but I don't quite understand. And this and these individuals are taking extreme advantage of those individuals who have low self-esteem.
I have talked about this because in my professional life, I've dealt with it. I've talked about this on the show. We've done segments on what they teach these kids at colleges. They teach them white guilt. It's a college course, for God's sakes. These people, just to recap, are charging this Indian woman and this black woman are charging white women $2,500, up to $2,500, to disabuse them of their racism. And I didn't add that they're charging, they also offer consulting services, charging $150 for an hour with either of them or $300 for the two women. And so here's what their application form says.
Okay, so quote, you said $150 for one.
For an hour for one or three. Or like so you get a deal so, for.
No, there's no discount.
There's no discount, right.
You just got to pay. You double the, you want to talk to both of us? It's $300.
Yeah.
Want to talk to one
it's
of
like
us?
It's
$150. right.
You get two leftist race-obsessed zealots for,
yeah,
you know.
So we both could beat on you.
So listen to what the application form says. Quote, so you are willing to set aside your white women tears? The application form asks.
Wow.
Yeah. But again, I've said this. This is what
they're signing a waiver to be abused.
In these college courses and in these seminars, the white guilt culture is huge and people are there are people who are willing to step in and separate you from your money if you're guilty enough.
Are you?
So the point that I was making earlier that just I was just so flustered because at the end of the day, and Khalida made this point during the break, some of these people who are paying this money may mean well. They may have good hearts and good intentions. But the problem is, if you are trying to actually solve the issue, to bring understanding, this doesn't do it. This is a microwave way to address race relations. Because what ends up happening in a situation like this, is it creates an incentive to say, hey, let me write you a check. Hey, let me do whatever it is you're asking me to do. And then that means my heart is fixed. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. The only way that you deal with hearts and minds is to deal with hearts and minds. There's no amount of money in the world that can change a person's heart.
But how do you know what's in these people's hearts?
And that's the and here's the thing. This is the point that I'm making. You don't know what's in these people's hearts until you build real relationships with people,
which is the
hard work that nobody wants to do. They'd rather just have someone write me a check or vote the way that I tell you to, and that means all of a sudden you are cleansed of all of your racist
sins. But you know where that comes from in many instances, since we're talking about our Western European ideals, is that you can pretty much tell where a person's heart is by looking at their checkbook register. And so what happens in many instances, and we see and we hear this all the time, we hear this on Sundays or we hear this in our houses of worship, that you know when you give, right, when you give your money, right, that in some way, shape, or form, that absolves you. That means that you're on the right path. That means that you're putting your heart in the right place.
Right.
And you and I
let's talk about that, Todd. Let's talk about
that. Go right ahead.
Because you know I went to Christian schools for most of my life, and my degree is from a Christian university. You're right that is the way that it is said and portrayed.
Correct.
But that is not accurate because the gift is supposed to be about the heart. If your heart is foul, God doesn't care about what kind of gift you give him. It doesn't matter how much money. It doesn't matter how big your check is.
Agreed.
If your heart ain't right, your money don't matter.
I agree. Yeah,
but we live in a society where we try to take shortcuts. We try to take shortcuts. Race, like we talked about on the last segment, race is very complicated. It's a complex issue. It's not something that can be solved in sound bites or tweets, right, or $2,500 plates.
And that's what I believe, by looking at this from the surface, that's what these women are basically doing. Give us $2,500 or give us $300.
Get out of racism free card.
Yeah, get out of racism free. And so we're going to teach you how to behave. But here, it's just like Reverend Ike. Send your dollar and get a prayer, right? But just remember, if you don't send a dollar, you ain't got a prayer. Yeah,
but they're judging these women's hearts and minds.
By their checkbook.
And they don't know them.
Not by their checkbook.
No, they're judging their hearts and minds, period. And they don't know them.
Because they're white.
Exactly.
So by definition, you're white. Therefore, you have racism by definition for being white. And I'm going to tell you something. I there's a ton of examples I can give you.
And isn't that racist?
It is. Because
isn't that the very definition of racism?
There are some things that I've seen over
like
the last couple of years where if the roles were reversed, there would be lawsuits flying and people would be fired. Because, again, I'm always this whole finger wagging, and I've said this on this show many times, everybody's behavior should be on the table. You know, if you want to, women want to have these conversations about male behavior, I think everybody's behavior should be up for discussion. You know, because we all have issues in the society.
There's a lot of people that ain't acting right.
Yeah, a lot of people. So don't sit up and wag your finger and charge people money because you're going to fix them. But I guarantee you, and I've seen it, these people, I can almost assure you, are some of the worst offenders of the very thing they're preaching against.
And here's the thing, because you know we're entering into Black History Month, and we're honoring those who've gone before, such as the Honorable Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Here it is that this man said, "Don't judge me by the color of my skin, but by the content of my character." And these women, in doing this program, in my view, are spitting on the very statue and the very things that Martin Luther King stood for.
It is
sad.
I completely 100% agree. I am a King disciple. I believe in the preachings and teachings of Martin Luther King, and this here is so disrespectful and so exploitative. That is Khalid playing that. I'm trying to have a serious conversation, and here comes Khalid with "For the Love of Money."
It's the root of the love of money is the root of all evil.
It is, and I believe it is so exploitative. And it is so, and I can already hear the arguments. I understand the arguments that people would make in favor of it. I'm just not buying it.
I can't. You'd have to help me to hear that argument. I don't hear an argument on behalf.
This is
of
not.
It. I cannot,
this is not how you solve racism.
It's a scam.
Because
it's not
what?
Meant to.
No, it's not meant to. It's absolutely not meant to. Because again, let's just say for the sake of conversation, let's say that some of the people that you're dealing with are racist, right? Or they harbor racist views, or they harbor racist thoughts, or they still harbor prejudices about Black people. These are some of the people who are the worst when they feel like they can just do something and wash their racism sins away.
Well, I'm gonna ask
when they
you
can
this.
Just write a check or give a vote. And then that means that they're all good.
I'm going to ask you a question. I'm going to ask you a question, and I don't have a view on this, but this is just a general question that I have for both of you. If we talk about that people have prejudice or prejudgments against a group of people based upon stereotypes, who is responsible for the stereotype? Is the person who the stereotype is towards, do they have any responsibility for the way that people view them?
I think it's a little bit of both. I don't want to, like, that's going to totally derail the conversation. But it's a little bit of both. I think it's a little bit of both.
Well, the reason why I say that is because here it is that these women are saying that they want to de-racify these white people. Okay,
they want to exercise.
They want to exercise them from their
racism.
Yeah,
is that a word?
It is now.
It is now.
I want to play Scrabble with him.
We need to make a Todd dictionary.
De-racify
like Jesse Jackson.
If LL can say conversate, I can say de-racify. Okay, about that.
Well, you know, conversate is in the dictionary now.
I got
a challenge for you. Find something that rhymes with de-racify.
I will. So the idea then, I just lost my complete train of thought.
If the idea was to de-racify these women,
right?
Then
doesn't that make these actual people, doesn't that make them racist that are trying to do this? And doesn't this kind of perpetuate the stereotype of racism toward Blacks?
Well, here's the thing, and Khalida kind of touched on it a little bit, and I agreed with this particular point. you don't know these people's hearts. You just automatically assume. And there's
the people that are requiring counseling or the people who are
right. The people
money?
Who are requiring counseling. Right. You don't know these people's hearts, and I think it is completely unfair. And people can crucify me for this, and it is what it is. It's all good. I think it's completely unfair to assume that every single white person on the face of the planet is racist or have some sort of racist thoughts or racist ideas
or privilege
or a racist ideology.
Yeah.
I think that is so wrong on so many different levels. Yes, racism, there is still such thing as racism. Racism is something that Khalid alluded to earlier. Racism is a human condition. It is a human condition. But to sit up there and make the argument, which a lot of people make, that every single white person is racist by virtue of them being white, is completely and totally wrong. It's against everything I've ever been taught on this issue. It's so wrong.
Here's one of the things that I've noticed in my travels. Many places that I go, when there's a mixture of different colors of individuals, many of the people, they look at themselves as their nationality. They don't look at themselves as a color. That is a very first world Western ideology in terms of looking at an individual based upon the color of the amount of melanin they have in their skin.
Well, actually, that'll be a topic next week.
Well, thanks for announcing the show next week.
Oh,
folks,
boy.
You're listening to the Todd Allen Show.
The Todd Allen Show.
Todd Allen Radio. Sit back, enjoy the show.
Welcome back, folks. This is the second hour of the Todd Allen Show. I'm your host, Professor Econ Todd Allen, in studio with Dario Kingpin Morrow. Dario.
What's up, sir?
And
I
also,
think I got myself in trouble on that last one, but that's okay.
Well, you're going to get in trouble in this segment, too.
I'm going to I'm going to try not to let you cost me money.
Khalid Namar.
I'm well. How are you?
Outstanding. So let's just keep this going. I want to talk about something that I think is very, very important. And many times, as you know, Darvio, that I get on I put my professorial hat on and I get kind of enamored with the idea of the Democrats. And I talk about the Democratic Party, and I talk about how it's the party of Jim Crow, talk about it's the party of slavery, talk about it's the party that was instrumental in developing the Ku Klux Klan. And I've had a lot of different people have conversations with me talking about how the parties switched, et cetera, et cetera. But one of the things that we were talking about at break is that I believe that the Democratic Party is the party of anti-constitutionalists. I think that the Democratic Party is the party of the Confederacy, even to this day, because I believe that their ideology is to separate people, because if they separate people, they can divide and conquer. You said that during the break you talked about this, but you talked about it in a much more eloquent way than I do in many instances when it comes
to
that.
Yeah, so, you know, when you go on your soliloquy, I don't necessarily agree.
Wow, a soliloquy. Thank you.
that wasn't a pejorative either. But I don't necessarily agree with all of that. I don't necessarily agree with the blanket description of the modern Democratic Party. But I will say this. There is something that is similar in terms of how the party is structured. The party is an amalgamation of groups. And it has always been an amalgamation of groups.
Let me just put it this way. What do you call a pig in a dress? A well-dressed pig.
Continuing the conversation. You're not going to get me to agree with you on that. Like, you know I don't agree with your blanket description of the entire Democratic Party. I don't agree with that. But Khalid and I were talking about how there are groups in the Democratic Party who do not agree with each other on damn near anything. It's an amalgamation of a bunch of different groups. They've always been like that.
Except for white group.
Well, there's white liberals.
Well, right, but if there's you talk, but if you talk about groups of people, you talk about you talk about Black Americans who vote Black issues. You talk about Jewish Americans who vote Jewish issues. You can talk about women who vote women issues. You can talk about gays who vote gays issues. But if you have white men who want to talk about white men issues, they're pushed out of the party. Well, they're not allowed to be in it.
Well, here's the thing: it depends on number one. It depends on what you define as white men issues.
That depends upon the group.
Yeah, I think that could be a little loaded depending on what you're talking about. But also, I mean, the Democratic Party still gets 40% of the white vote. So there is still a significant segment of the white population that vote Democrat. So and those are largely white liberals. They still have.
But again, liberals.
Yeah, I mean, they vote based on ideology, so they're liberals, like, you know what I mean. But the party now, the Democratic Party as a whole, actually has more moderates in it than it has liberals, which is what we're witnessing right now in this food fight in the Democratic primary that we're seeing right now as they're tearing each other apart. They're actually the money and the energy and all of that are with the liberals in the Democratic Party, but there are actually more moderate voters than liberal voters in the Democratic Party. So the structure of the Democratic Party is very complex. Like, it's not a particular ideology. If you look at the Republican Party, largely speaking, obviously there are some deviations there. Largely speaking, most of the people who are in the Republican Party or consider themselves to be Republicans are center to center, right to right. Right. Like so they largely agree on most big policy issues.
Conservative issues. Right.
Right. Not all, but
right,
most. So
right.
So even if you look at the groups in the Republican Party, so Hispanic Americans who are Republicans, Hispanic Republicans are largely conservative
right.
on most issues. They may not agree because the Republican Party does have an issue where Hispanic Republicans and Black Republicans don't always agree with white Republicans on some issues.
Right.
But largely.
But in general, family
yeah,
issues.
In general, largely
choice
speaking,
issues, right.
it's mm-hmm. it's ideologically based.
Correct.
With the Democrats, they have a bunch of different people
right.
in the party. And when you get to issues, when you get to the nitty gritty on issues, a lot of them don't agree with each other on anything.
And then you have some of the smaller groups that have issues that they basically start to dominate the overall group. And this is what you're kind of seeing now, that they're eating their young at this particular point.
Well, now, I mean, you have Khalid and I were talking earlier, and this will set up the clip that he wants to play. I'm blanking. What is his name?
James Carville,
who's the one that got Bill Clinton elected, who said in this interview he's not a moderate. He is a liberal, but he cares about winning, and he is scared to death about the rise of Bernie Sanders and the lurch of the Democratic Party to the left, because he's afraid that they're going to scare away moderate voters, including moderate voters in their own party, because the Democratic voters are not as liberal as the Democratic leadership. So we'll go to that clip.
He really is expressing in this clip we're about to hear is this disappointment with the Democratic Party, Democrat Party, that's what I call it, Democrat Party platform. Oops.
Here we go. If Khalid can get it together.
And why is Tom Perez still the chairman of the Democratic National Committee? I have no idea. This party needs to wake up and make sure that we talk about things that are relevant to people. We need to go back to 2018, where we had good, diverse, strong candidates that had real connections to the community and talked about real things. We don't need to become the British Labour Party. That's a bad thing. It's not going well over there.
So let our listeners know what we talk about the British Labour Party.
So basically what he's talking about, and Khalid, feel free to jump in, but basically the Labour Party in this, and particularly in this most recent election, the Conservative Party over there, and it's hard to, like, when we're talking to American audiences, because you hear conservative, and their conservative
things,
is a little, their conservative is a little different. And their liberal, their left is very different.
Yeah.
The British Labour Party went hard left, hard left with Jeremy Corbyn as their leader, and they got blown out by the Conservative Party, where the Conservative Party started looking at, ironically, the composition of their election started to look very similar to the Republican Party, where they were starting to get working class voters, which the Conservative Party in Britain, they've never done well with working class voters, not since the Thatcher years. So what he's talking about, what he's referring to, is having a party go so far to the left that they end up getting blown out electorally. And Khalid, feel free to add on it.
Yeah, because pretty much right now you had this lurch to the left to where it brought upon Brexit.
Yeah.
And, yep. You know, and that's what happens
now. And they were far left. Yeah. This isn't the Labor Party of Tony Blair. Blair was a moderate.
Right.
You know what I mean?
So now,
well, this isn't the Democratic Party of Kennedy here in the United States.
Well, it's not even
Clinton.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Clinton would be looked at as Newt Gingrich nowadays.
Right.
And there is a fear, because here's the United States, and people don't like to hear this, but it's the truth. Nobody on the left or the right likes to hear it. This is a center country. So if you go too far to the extremes, voters will rebel. And people are Democrats are afraid that they're going to go too far to the left and scare everybody off.
Well, here's the question. Okay, I'm going to go through, well, for our listeners, I'm going to go through some of the candidates, and then I just kind of want you to tell me where you think they fall along the political spectrum. Elizabeth Warren.
She's hard left.
Bernie Sanders.
He's a socialist.
Pete Buttigieg.
Pete, in any other era, would be a liberal, but he's running as a moderate today.
Okay. And so those are the top three of the Democratic Party at this particular point in time.
I would also argue that Joe Biden, in any other era, would be considered a liberal, but he's
basically a
moderate.
I didn't even mention him, because where did he fall in the Iowa caucus? Did he even show?
I don't even think the people who were supposed to be counting the votes at the Iowa caucus showed.
So then where do you think Donald Trump is?
Donald Trump, like, politically,
yes.
Like, you talk about his...
Where would you place him? I mean, he's not a fiscal conservative, for sure.
No, he's a... Trump is a populist, so if we're... He's hard to grade on a left-right spectrum, but if you're going to...
You wouldn't put him in a central?
Is what I'm about to say. If you're going to put him on the left-right spectrum, you would probably say Donald Trump is a center-left Republican.
Center-left Republican.
He's a center-left Republican.
And would you say left because of his financial policies?
Yeah, on economic issues, he's no fiscal conservative.
At all.
We all know that.
At all.
It was funny because I saw Greg Gutfeld on The Five the other day. My homeboy, Lawrence B. Johnson, was hosting. Was one of the hosts. Shout out to Lawrence B. Jones. Yeah, Lawrence B. Jones. Yeah. Shout out to Lawrence B. Jones. I saw him say that Trump has been a better Democrat president than Democrats, because a lot of his policies.
That is true.
A lot of his economic policies are not conservative in the traditional sense of what
we consider. Which is
correct.
How he was able to get so many Obama voters. He flipped 200 counties, as I said before, that went for Obama.
But he got
some of the same coalition, that Reagan got. When Reagan was elected.
Yes, because Reagan was one of the last Republican presidents to get the working class.
But there's a difference because, in the election that we just had, we had basically two newbies because we had an outgoing president who was basically termed out. So we have two newbies. And we'll talk more about that when we come back. Folks, you're listening to The Todd Allen Show.
The Todd Allen Show.
I'm Kira Davis, host of the Just Listen to Yourself podcast, and that's the podcast where I ask you to take your talking points on your favorite hot-button issues of the day and draw them out to their logical conclusion. And that's available right here on the FCB Radio Network.
The Todd Allen Show.
Welcome back, folks. You're listening to The Todd Allen Show. Before the break, I was trying to talk about how... Here it is that you have two candidates who are basically newbies, because you have Obama, who's now termed out, who cannot run again for re-election. And so you have Hillary Clinton, who's making promises, and you have Donald Trump, who's making promises. So when we talked about where they are ideology-wise, politically, I mean, we know Hillary was just to the left, leftward leaning as well.
She's considered center left in today's Democratic Party.
Yeah, well.
She's another person where the definitions change. She was a liberal, hardcore. She was a progressive.
Right.
Exactly. She was considered a progressive 10 years ago.
Right.
Today she is the poster child of the moderate.
That's because she's keeping her mouth shut.
it's because the party as a whole is moving
right
further left.
But the point I want to make is that now no one really knew where Donald Trump was going to be. No one expected him to win. Truth be told, we didn't expect him here at the Todd Allen Show that he was going to win.
No,
I think the words that I used was kabuki theater. Mm-hmm. So he becomes president. I really believe that people are surprised, Khalid, at how successful Donald Trump has been as president. That this was totally it was beyond the pale. They didn't believe that this guy would be this successful.
Well, I'm going to tell you who this really hurts the most, and that is the doctrinaire conservatives who spent all this money on their think tanks and their books and their, you know, their white papers, and none of their orthodox strategy worked. He smashed all of them.
Right.
On that stage, and he was my 18th choice out of 17 candidates.
Right.
But all these doctrinaire people, all the money and all the polish and all the Harvard, Yale degrees and the political consultants, none of that worked to get through to the people because they kind of basically overanalyzed what kind of language to use. Trump is so plain spoken that some people out in the Midwest, you know, I'm going to tell you something, and this is very personal. When he went to that, was that a black church? And he had that famous rant about your schools are bad, your cities are crap, you know. What do you have to lose?
What the hell do you have to lose?
And one of my mother's friends, who's black, said, you know what? That's when he got me.
Is that right?
Swear to God. That kind of plain talk
right.
got to a lot of people.
And that's
and these doctrinaire conservatives, they hate it.
Right.
Because they thinking, who the heck is this? They are the ones that thought they had all the answers.
And
they couldn't win. They couldn't beat Barack Obama.
Right.
And they couldn't beat Hillary or whatever. But he comes along with this plain talk. And they're like, this fool actually won?
Well, and I think there's a lot of truth to that. Because a lot of the things that doctrinaire. And, you know, we were talking about this, you know, off air. I'm not a quote unquote doctrinaire conservative, you know. Shut up. I'm more center, but
that's what we're calling it now.
Shut up. Anyway, but you're absolutely right. A lot of the policy positions that doctrinaire conservatives were taking didn't work, and to some degree, like, people want to blame, like, say that Trump got elected because of racism. And that's just too simplistic.
Of course.
That's too simplistic to just write off the entire election like that. It's, again, like most things, especially involving that, it's more complicated. But I think a large part of it was the fact that he spoke at a level that everybody could understand. Even though this is a billionaire who sounds like the drunk guy at the end of the bar. And people understood it and gravitated towards it. As well as some of his policy, a lot of his policy positions are very working class friendly.
And this is the problem that the elites have. And this is why they call the people that follow him the deplorables. And this is why you have Don Lemon and all the other elites that are on the media, that they're laughing at the people who support this particular president. What he's done is nothing short of remarkable. And now not everything that he says and not everything that he's done do I necessarily agree with. And Darville, you and I have had discussions in terms of his immigration policies and things like that. And so,
right. Because, you know, that's something I vehemently disagree with.
Yeah. And so, but by and large, even with the characteristics that this guy brought into office, the characteristics that he continues to have, the Twitter in chief and all of that kind of stuff, he has not done anything essentially that has damaged the country. And I think that's the thing that has surprised a lot of people.
Well, I think a lot of people would disagree with that based on their viewpoints on what he's done. Not everybody believes that what he's done is a good thing. I think that's a matter of opinion.
Well, I can tell you what their arguments philosophy. Are, which always cracks me up because they hear the same thing every few years. Well, the rest of the world is laughing at us. You know, and I say, well, first of all, who in the hell is laughing? Is Europe laughing with this Brexit nonsense they went through 2 years ago?
No.
Is Eastern Europe laughing with all this the turmoil they have going on? How about Germany? Who are they laughing at when they got 1.5 million people rushing through their gates, you know? Who's what is South America? Are they laughing? I don't think so, with the highest murder rates in the world and people basically trying to get through our southern border. This whole stuff about the rest of the world, only a leftist zealot says stuff like that. Because they've never been around the world.
And then we
true,
talk about
they have a much more flattering view of the rest of the world than I do. And many other people, because we know what's actually going on in the rest of the world. Well, they have no reason to laugh at anybody.
Everybody
has their own problems.
You can always tell how the rest of the world views us, but the number of people that are trying to get into the
absolutely.
Country.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, and so when you look at, okay, do we have a net loss or a net gain of people that want to come in here? Okay. That should give you an idea of what the rest of the world thinks of the United States.
In other words, this one thing. People who don't know basic geography like to talk world affairs. I get specific when I ask.
Well, at least
things.
They know that Kansas City Chiefs are not from the state of Kansas.
Yeah, a lot of people. you'd be surprised how many people don't know that. But I'll ask this: I'll say when you start talking about perception, right now, if you look at what's been going on around the world the last say 10 years and what's not happening right now,
right?
American troops are still engaged overseas, but we are not even talking about war as much like the actual conflicts as we were talking about.
Yeah.
I said after this Iran strike against Soleimani, 2 weeks we're not going to be talking about war with Iran. Are we talking about war with Iran?
No.
This was media
hysteria. But then you had the House of Representatives who, and we're going to talk about impeachment in just a moment. We had the House of Representatives who basically came up with some sort of an act to kind of limit what the president can do on an international level after Soleimani.
Are you talking about this new war powers
war,
resolution?
War powers resolution, yeah.
Let's
kind of switch gears for just a moment. Let's talk about the impeachment because I know that we time is moving on here.
And the acquittal.
In the acquittal. One of the things that bothers me, and one of the things I think in terms of looking at this impeachment process that they had, when we're going from the impeachment inquiry into articles of impeachment in the whole nine, what they want to say is that Donald Trump used the Ukraine phone call, blah, 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 because he wanted to impact the 2020 elections. I think that this is exactly what the Democrats did. They used this impeachment process to impede the 2020 election.
And plus, Trump asked Zelensky, I don't know if you read the transcript. You seen the transcript of the phone call?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
A lot of people have it, but
yeah.
He asked him to find out what happened in about 2016.
2016.
Right. Now, again, this media has been telling us for a year that Joe Biden was the front runner, old fourth place Joe. Because they just.
But hey, how can he be a political rival and they haven't even decided who,
right.
who's running?
Right. This man has been running for president since I was in almost like a year out of high school. And he hasn't won a thing in his whole career. And all of a sudden, he's the front runner. But guess what? He flames out in his first in Iowa already. And what's going to happen in New Hampshire? He's going to be out of this race in about 3 weeks. Nobody cares about Joe Biden except the media. So for them to think that Trump needed some trick to knock him out when all he needed was Pete Buttigieg. I mean, it's just really? How impressive is this guy?
Right. I mean, and so here's the thing. What does that say in terms of we've known that the Democratic Party have done some back office things because they did the thing in 2016 when Bernie was popular, and all of a sudden he flames out against Hillary. Okay, they give him a house, they give him a car. Okay, he's gone. Right. So if they're saying at this particular point in time that the conversation that he's having with the Ukrainian president is basically against Joe Biden, his political rival, what does that say for the other 20 people that were running against him at the time?
Right, yeah. I mean, I think that this whole impeachment, I'm always amazed at how people on Facebook, you know, all those Facebook constitutionalists, they're trying to do something that the House Democrats couldn't do. That is, name something specific to impeach him for. They put nothing. That's why they put nothing in these articles. Abuse of power is so subjective, though.
Right. It's not a crime.
You can accuse every president, I don't know, since George Washington of abuse of power. It's a subjective charge.
Right. I mean, is there a mark? Is there a line that you can't go? That if you go about, oh, that's abuse of power.
Exactly.
Can you get over that?
Yeah. And again, I hate doing this every other week, but I'm sorry. I get really upset because, you know, I teach the Constitution. I have in my pocket right now and I carry with me every day?
Constitution.
I got a pocket Constitution.
Okay.
You know what I carry in the other pocket?
The
Federalist Papers.
Oh.
You know? And it's like...
You have to tell our listeners what the Federalist Papers are.
Okay.
Because many of the people, especially our Facebook constitutionalists, don't know what the Federalist Papers are.
All right. Okay. The Federalist Papers were
a
series of essays by James Madison, Hamilton, and John Jay, which basically outlined the rationalization for the Constitution.
Right.
So if you want to know what they were thinking,
it's the cliff notes,
folks. it gives you an idea of what they were thinking when they wrote in, what the interpretation was behind all the amendments and clauses and stuff. The Constitution is like the Bible in the sense that you have to study it. You can't read it and know it.
Right.
You have to study every word.
Right.
Like every word.
Right.
And so when it comes to some of the interpretations of it, it's clear what they meant by high crimes and misdemeanors, meaning involving the office. Also, this impoundment thing that Trump was involved in, meaning with Ukraine aid, this is an ongoing dispute between the executive and the legislative branch for the past 200 years,
right,
where presidents have withheld aid. It's an argument. It's not impeachable,
but
basically.
By Constitution, it was the president who has the authority to implement foreign transactions for foreign aid.
But they're always fighting over this kind of stuff. Right. So this is not impeachable.
Well, I shouldn't say foreign aid, but anything international
foreign policy.
Right.
It is just it's a natural sparring match that goes on all the time between the executive branch and Congress.
So the president is impeached, goes to the Senate. We have this show, and now the House managers, and we're going to probably have to pick some of this up on the next segment too. Now the House managers want to say, okay, we're bringing these articles of incorporation to you of impeachment to you, but we also want you to do our job and to ask more witnesses to come in and testify.
No, you brought us the case. It's done. Just like a lawyer said, you would be disbarred for trying to do that in a real trial.
And so here's the thing, and we'll come back after the break. But here's the thing with our Facebook constitutionalists. Now they agree what the media is saying is that, oh, they should have brought – it's unfair because they didn't bring any more witnesses in. Let's talk more about that on the break. You're listening to The Todd Allen Show.
The Todd Allen Show. Show.
The iHeartRadio app is
in my pocket wherever I go.
I love me some playlists.
Because it's time consuming. You're like, oh, let me find this song. Their playlists are already set up.
Hip hop, a little throwback.
You know when I'm about to get my workout on?
A little R&B, some slow jams.
Yeah, that's the best part. It's free. Free is what I can afford right now. So
I'm telling everybody.
The iHeartRadio app. Radio, music, podcasts, all free. Free never sounded better. Download the iHeartRadio app today.
The Todd Allen Show.
Welcome back, folks. You're listening to The Todd Allen Show. Okay, real quickly. People are upset because they didn't bring in Bolden. They didn't bring in maybe some other people because they said, well, okay, well, we want more witnesses. The problem with that is this. If they wanted more witnesses, they seem to think that there was only going to be one. They don't think that the president's defense was going to bring in Joe Biden, his son. They were going to bring in there's probably a whole long list, a Christmas list of people that they could have brought in as well.
Well, they could have brought these in the House portion of the inquiry, but they didn't.
Correct.
They excluded the Office of Legal Counsel, which is the president's legal team. President couldn't call witnesses, but then when they handed over to the Senate, they want to dictate the terms and say I thought Adam Schiff said it was undisputed evidence that they could, you know, prove beyond a reasonable doubt. Why do you need more witnesses?
Right.
And also, once you introduce the charges over and you pass them over to the Senate, you can't add new stuff to it.
Right.
You know, you can't.
Well, part of the problem was that they had never listed a crime.
No, not even a political crime, because impeachment can be a political crime or it can be a statutory crime. They basically listed two vague, empty arguments which you can drop anything in them you want. Abuse of power, contempt of Congress. As Jonathan Turley said, whom I love, the George Washington constitutional law professor, the only real one they had on that panel last month, said that Congress doesn't get to decide what contempt is. The courts do.
Correct.
Once you decide there's a dispute between documents and information, you go to court. But Nancy Pelosi said it best. We can't be held to the mercy of the courts.
Right.
In other words, it's going to take too long. We can't influence the election.
Exactly. And that was my whole argument, that they tried to use this to influence the argument, the election. Okay, so.
Nancy Pelosi was quite a big basketball fan years ago. You know who her favorite NBA player was? Rip Hamilton. I need a rim shot, please.
Yeah. Rip Hamilton. Right. So
hold on.
You'll give me a rim shot?
Hold on. Because that was such a freaking dad joke.
he go, and I'm about to give me, a rib shot. Okay. I'll be here all week.
Yeah. Interesting thing.
Try the veal.
Yeah. Interesting thing is that she pre-ripped it. She pre-ripped it before after the whole thing. Okay.
She pre-ripped.
Pre-ripped. So here it is that now we've gone through impeachment. We've gone through the trial. The president has been acquitted. Where do we go from here?
To another scam. I'm taking bets on which Eastern European country they're going to pick next. I predict it's going to be Azerbaijan.
Azerbaijan.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That'll be the next European country that they accuse of something.
Right.
That'll be our national security concern next.
So, is the country? Can the country come together now?
No. Absolutely not.
Okay, so we're
the lead is so.
So we're done.
Positive,
optimistic.
So we're done. It's over.
No,
with?
The left is deranged.
The experiment is done.
They are delusional, deranged, angry, unhappy human beings, and they will continue to be as long as they're losing elections as they have been, and they are. Trump will be in office. If Trump wins re-election, you will not be able to get a therapist anywhere on the West Coast.
So now that we've had that picture of sunshine and rainbows, can we move on to the next topic,
yes.
Sir?
Right. Yes. Oprah Winfrey is basically now Darth Vader.
All my life I had to fight.
Had to fight.
But I'll kill him then.
Till you do right by me. Think you just gonna crumble. All right, you color purple wannabe.
That was the last thing she was in that black people watched.
That's a truth.
Well, and you weren't even born then. That was it.
What was that, like 83?
84. Yeah.
84?
Right. Wow.
Right. That's funny.
Thriller had been out 3 years at that point. That's a long time ago.
So what's the issue with Oprah?
Well, for those who don't know, Russell Simmons, the Def Jam hip-hop mogul, He's been one of the casualties of the Me Too movement. He's been accused of rape, not sexual assault, but rape on several occasions. I think there's up to 7 accusers. I heard as many as 9. He and Brett Ratner apparently were having a little fun together, the director, Brett Ratner, and apparently women come out and said that they were raped by Russell Simmons. And you know, so Russell has been very, very quiet of the last year, and this documentary called For the Record was executive produced by Oprah Winfrey, and she has now bowed out of it, which was going to be along the lines of an R. Kelly surviving R. Kelly type of documentary, but it was going to be focused on Russell Simmons. She has now dropped out of it. She didn't give a real reason, but she says she still supports the women. She thinks that their stories should be heard. However, she decided to drop out of the of executive producing the documentary. And so I don't know what's going to happen, but Apple TV has dropped it as well.
Wow, that's huge.
But it's coming to HBO Max. Yeah,
that's huge.
Yeah, it's coming to HBO Max.
HBO traffics that kind of stuff, so they don't give a damn.
So my take on it is
they don't care if it's accurate or not.
They traffic it.
Yeah. My take on it is a lot of things that I look at people's responses when I can try to gauge what their guilt is. So I kind of look at Russell's responses to some of these charges, and he was basically saying, "Well, if someone accused me of rape, I'm not gonna say, well, I don't quite remember it that way," you know. He basically kind of faded away, and I think that's why he started taking up Yoda.
But do you think he was trying to be Yoda?
Yoda.
Yeah.
Oh, no, Buddhism. I'm sorry, Buddhism.
Yeah. Yeah. But do you think...
I knew it was something medieval.
But do you think there's a question... And I'm not saying, just so people don't get on me and try to cancel me. I'm not saying that I agree or disagree with this. I'm just asking a question for the record. Do you think that possibly his responses could have been him trying to find a politically correct way to clear his name? Because there are some segments of the Me Too movement that say if you deny it, that definitely means you did.
Well, but it's funny, he did not try to clear his name. He never spoke publicly about it. He issued a statement, and then he kind of faded away and then started spending time in, like, Indonesia.
Right.
Russell and Brett Ratner and some of the stories that these women have told, he never denied. Hey, I vehemently denied. He basically says, well, I don't remember it quite that way. Now, that's, it's like this. You can explain away one situation, perhaps even two, but nine allegations of rape, that's a little hard to kind of try to explain away as a misunderstanding, because that's not a good thing to follow you around. It's like everywhere you work, the building burns down. And you have to say, well,
yeah, what's the common denominator in this whole thing, right?
Is you.
But I will say this. The thing that's interesting about this is a lot of, especially for, because, you know, I come from the music world. I come from the hip hop world. We heard like the R. Kelly stuff, for example. We've been hearing that for years. Like, he married Aaliyah when she was 16 in 1994.
15
in 1994. So like that ain't new. The Russell stuff, all of the time that I've spent in hip hop, the Russell thing is kind of new. I've heard that he's not the nicest person in the world. I've heard that. Have you heard that, Khalid?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard that, but I've never heard him be attached to anything like this. So it doesn't mean that it's not true, but it's just, it was very surprising to me when I first heard it.
The reason why you didn't hear it is because of the women who it allegedly happened to were all kind of very anonymous. Mm. None of the women's careers ever went anywhere. Mm. Also, it was not a good time to come out and say anything. Mm. So now, once you had the Me Too movement come, people started sharing their stories.
And there's, I know some more media. And I know some people. Else. And I can't speak to Russell because I don't know the situation. But I do know of a woman who was at a different record company where that did happen to, where she was. Yeah. She was assaulted. She was on some Me Too stuff by a record exec. And when she rejected him, he cut her deal. Mm-hmm. So I do know it does happen.
Yeah. And if you listen to some of the things that have been out there, like, for instance, nobody in Hollywood was surprised at the Bill Cosby stuff because they've been hearing it for decades. Because there are no secrets.
He did a bit about Spanish Fly.
Yeah, back in the 70s.
Yeah, and it was in the 70s.
Yeah. Yeah. And Bill Maher said he's been hearing this stuff for 20 years about him. Everybody's been hearing this.
Well, the first case was in 2004. So,
well, that was the first public case.
Yeah, the first public case.
That was, and, you know, actually, it's funny you mention that because Matt Lauer spoke to Barbara Bowman on the Today Show back then about it, but again, it got buried. He buried a lot of stories with his power and money. A lot of this stuff has been out there for 30, 40 years.
And it's unfortunate. I'm going to ask you a question about this too, but I just want to make a statement. He's another person that I've heard was not a very nice person.
Oh, no.
So let me ask you this. On people like this, particularly Bill Cosby, I mean Russell too, but particularly Bill Cosby, what do you do with their art? Are you allowed to still... Because I loved The Cosby Show. I own all 8 seasons on DVD.
I have a great answer.
And I have a very hard time. I have not watched any of them since it happened because there's a part of me that feels guilty. But on the other hand, it's like this is – and The Cosby Show, as you both know, had a huge beneficial impact for black people. So, so what do you do with their art?
Well, I'll say this. That's not Bill Cosby. In other words, if you like Dr. Huxtable, you like Dr. Huxtable. That's not Bill Cosby. Mm. You know, but any more than you watching Superman is not Christopher Reeve.
But this is the problem.
That's a very good point.
I mean, this is the problem. And when a world event happens,
very profound, brother.
When a world event happens or when something goes on, that they want to go to the actor and ask the actor what they think. But then these are people who pretend to be other people their entire lives, right? And so when people look at Bill Cosby, and again, you have to separate Bill Cosby, the person, from Bill Cosby, the actor. He plays an individual that people identify with the character that he's portraying.
So would you say, real quick, we're about to run out of time. Would you say, so is it okay to
still? This is like R. Kelly music. Everybody likes.
Well, listen, people are saying now, like, you are not allowed to listen to R. Kelly's music.
Listen. R. Kelly, back in the day, R. Kelly's music helped a brother out. You understand? R. Kelly's music was very. I mean, but
real quick, Todd. So can you still watch The Cosby Show? Can you still listen to
absolutely
R. Kelly's music?
I don't watch it because I didn't think it was that funny.
Really?
No. It was too sanitized. I like Fred Safran, who was racist, bigoted, grumpy, hated his in-laws.
Wow.
That's like real life.
Archie Bunker.
That's like real life.
Yeah. I never would have thought that you would have liked that. Yes. I never would have thought that you would have liked that.
You're being facetious.
Some of those are my family members.
I never thought that you'd rather watch a curmudgeon. Like, yes.
We'll be right back, folks. You're listening to The Todd Allen Show.
The Todd Allen Show. This is the Todd Allen Report.
Hello, this is Todd Allen. The divide between Republicans and Democrats has been very contentious these past 3 years. However, in the past, it has been a lot worse. One of the challenges we face today is the lack of historical context. Many people today don't know history or know revisionist history only. Journalists and educators no longer report based on historical context or teach in such a way as to allow critical thinking, but report and teach with one goal in view, to control how you think. Freedom is only free when an individual has the capacity to make a choice free of bias, free of prejudice, and free of a caged mind. So in light of all the antagonistic events of the past 3 years, the allegation of Russian interference and collusion, the Mueller report, the FISA court, the calls for impeachment, the House impeachment inquiry, the question of constitutionality, impeachment, acquittal, and the righteous indignation of the elites on both sides, I will sum up the events using the vernacular of the day, so all my listeners will understand. To some, I will offend. To others, they will understand. And using as few words as necessary for full clarity, this is whack. I'm Todd Allen. This is the Todd Allen Report.
The Todd Allen Show.
Welcome back, folks. Now we've come to one of our favorite segments of the Todd Allen Show, You Big Dummy.
I'll spell it for you. D-U-M-M-Y, period.
Stupid!
The reason that bad things happen to you is because you're a dumbass.
You big dummy.
Okay, first I have to apologize because it appears that we're picking on Florida. And we're not.
Yeah, Khalid wasn't here last week, and yeah. I did You Big Dummy, and that story was from Florida.
And I'm sorry, Florida, you just have a disproportionate number of dummies. I don't know what it is, something in the water. I don't know. But Florida, this is from Florida.
It's a global warming.
And it's not unusual to have a drug bust story, particularly in Florida. I mean, you know, it's kind of like laying all over the place down there. Sorry.
Jeez.
This is from Santa Rosa County, Florida. Two men were not discreet in their plans to sell drugs in the Florida panhandle, according to officials. All right. The Florida Highway Patrol arrested two men suspected of drug trafficking after troopers pulled them over on Saturday and found drugs. Okay. So you wonder, how do they find these drugs? Did they, like, search the car? Did they find them in a wheel well? Did they find them, you know, buried under the seat or in a trunk or something like that? And did they bring in the dog?
Right, drug sniffing dog.
No. They really didn't have to work that hard because these geniuses had their drugs in a duffel bag labeled bag full of drugs.
That's funny.
Gee, I hope they don't look in the bag that says bag full of drugs.
Please, officer, don't look in the bag that says bag full of drugs.
Nothing to see here, folks. Nothing to see here.
And on top of that, they were speeding.
Oh, so you asking for it.
They were speeding. The Santa Rosa County Sheriff's Office assisted in the search of the vehicle, which turned up methamphetamine.
Oh, jeez.
Also known as date rape drug, GHB.
Were they using their own supply?
Cocaine and fentanyl. Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
Note to self, do not traffic your illegal narcotics in bags labeled bag full of drugs. Our canines can read. It's the Santa Sheriff posted on social media. Oh, my God. The only thing I'm disappointed in this story, they don't list the dummies' names.
Yes, we need those
names. It's two of them.
We need those names. Those names need
to be
public.
Have a picture of the bag here in big black letters. It says bag full of drugs. I am just like
bag full of drugs.
This is going to be hell of an evidence. You know, when you take it to court, it's going to be like, here's the drugs, here's their bag, and the bag says bag full of drugs. So
the
they can't
quickest
say
trial ever.
They can't say we didn't know what was in there.
So if
because
you're the,
it says
if you're the lawyer, what are you saying?
I'm going to say, Your Honor, my clients are clearly, as you can demonstrate by this case, are not bright men. Men who are not this who are this dense should not be in our criminal justice system. They should be getting help somewhere. So I ask you to send them to some sort of diversion program because they are a danger mostly to themselves. And
that was pretty good. You would have made a decent lawyer. That was pretty good BS right there.
Yes. Clearly, Your Honor, if these men were, clearly, if they weren't as dense as, or should I say, sharp as bowling balls, would they have a bag that says bag full of drugs? They had no concept of getting caught.
Yeah, my argument was that, you know, Your Honor, no one can be this dumb, so this wasn't their bag.
But can they read?
No. So they didn't know that this was in, obviously they did not know that this was in their car.
But can they read?
It would depend. Did they come from a public school system?
Bag full of drugs.
Obviously, they don't read good.
Shout out to Ashley Herzog, our co-host for this.
Yeah, story. She's the one that suggested
her dummy sighting skills are getting very good.
Very, very good. That was an excellent. That was a winner right there.
Her overall posts on Facebook are becoming very.
Oh, Ashley is
coming, on fire.
Is coming with the ish. Like she brings the fire. Make sure that y'all add Ashley Herzog on Facebook and follow her on Instagram, Ashley Herzog 85.
Wow.
But yeah, those two guys are.
They don't have their names.
Well, those two guys.
They are the big dummies of the week. Actually, I think they should be in the running
in
the for the dummy of the year. Yeah.
Yeah, that should go in the Hall of Fame. Like,
I think they're the front runners. Of our dummy sweepstakes for the year, would you say? So we do our FCB caucus.
Yeah, the FCB. Yeah.
Hopefully it turns out better than Iowa.
We'll find out in a month from when we vote.
We found out who shot JR quicker than they found out the winner in Iowa.
We might find out where Jimmy Hoffa is buried by the time we find out who won in Iowa.
But everybody thinks they won. You notice that?
Yeah.
Bernie Sanders, I think we won.
The amazing thing is that Iowa's not, it's not big like the state of California.
No.
So I mean.
But they have an ancient caucus.
I am personally anti-caucus, and I saw this. You know, I was supporting a particular candidate in 2016, and we had a lot riding on the Nevada caucus.
It's stupid,
and not only is it stupid, but it's for fraud.
Explain to our listeners how the idea of the caucus and how it works.
Well, so I'm going to sit here real quick and just tell you how stupid it is. Mm-hmm. Khalid can get into the details a little bit, but it's not like a primary. It's not a regular primary. Like you have to physically go to the location, and the way that the Democrats' rules is just ridiculous. Like they have like two rounds or three rounds or something crazy.
So what is
like it's just weird. He can get into the details, but I'm just telling you, it's stupid.
Yeah. So what you do is you go into this room with all the
caucus is
the big room, and you go to the area of the candidate that you support.
Correct.
Right.
Part of the room.
Yeah, it's that part of the room. So say if you go to the Buttigieg line, right? And you see that Buttigieg actually does not have 15% of the vote. So what you do, say if you don't necessarily like that, you can go to another area where the candidate does have 15% of the vote. Because that's how you earn delegates. You have to get at least 15% of the vote, something like that.
Something like that.
So you got people moving around this room.
Is that the same way on the Democrat and the Republican, or is that just the Democrat?
I think it's mostly Democrats' rules. They have delegates and all this stuff. Yeah. So you basically have to go to the herd.
Yeah, with the Republicans, it's winner takes all, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's more like, but then you can – the Democrats have this whole delegate thing where delegates can actually
– Proportional, yeah.
Yeah, it's proportional delegates. So you go to this big, big room. You go to this area to support this candidate, right? You got people in this area. And you could decide, well, you know what? This Pete Buttigieg's line is looking kind of thin over here. Bernie's line looks pretty good. Let me go over to Bernie's side.
You go over there, right?
Yeah, you go over to Bernie's side. So once they count all these votes up, it's broken down by a percentage. And I want to get into the percentages, but you have to have at least, I think, 15% to get any delegates.
Mm-hmm.
And if you get below that, you're basically out. You know, you're Joe Biden essentially.
If nobody's standing in your line,
yeah.
That's fine.
So it's an old-fashioned
so
caucus.
Stupid. It's right. So stupid.
But then they had a mobile app thrown in to sort of count the delegates and everything, and
that didn't stress test.
Yeah, it's just a bunch of it's hilarious because
and the Nevada caucus is it's not as bad as Iowa, but it's bad too. And when I said. When I said earlier it was right for fraud.
What do? They hold it on the state fairgrounds?
What's coming up next? New Hampshire?
Yes. New Hampshire and then Nevada, right?
Yeah, and South Carolina.
And then South Carolina.
Yeah. So that's Super Tuesday, right?
No, South Carolina is before Super Tuesday, okay. I believe. That's
how accurate
of
predictor are these? Is the Iowa caucus in terms of who becomes
for the Democrats,
not
every
really.
Person who's recently who's won Iowa has won the nomination.
Well, we say recently,
doesn't necessarily.
Part of you go back.
So Obama won Iowa. Did Kerry win Iowa?
I don't think so. I don't think McCain.
He did because remember Howard Dean was in the lead in Iowa.
Before the I have a scream speech.
I have a scream.
And I believe Bill won. Iowa.
I think only two of the last several Democratic nominees have won Iowa. Only a couple.
I have to go back and look that up.
But Buttigieg is filling himself now. But I'm telling you, he will not be the nominee. Biden will be out of the race in about a month, or less.
So you're predicting feel the burn?
Yes. I'm predicting Bernie and Trump will go at it, and Bernie will get trounced.
Yeah. I would agree. I think if Bernie is the nominee, he's
so
his going
question:
to get
if Bernie's nominee, who's his VP selection?
Oh, somebody black. He's gonna pick a black female. He's gonna pick a
Kamala Harris,
probably, or
because Bernie, yeah. And this is another underreported thing. Bernie does not do very well among black voters. So
no,
but getting Kamala doesn't make much sense because she's I got some
Michelle Obama.
No, she's not going to do it. She don't want a part of it.
Can we stop? Listen, I'm glad you brought that
up. There's some people.
Now you're about to. You're about to break Khalid.
Let me tell you. I have heard this mentioned, and I'm going to tell you. Michelle Obama hates politics. She is not running. Colin Kaepernick will speak at a Blue Lives Matter rally before Michelle Obama will enter the presidential race.
Well, it depends on how much money he gets.
You will. It ain't happening.
And here's...
You're a terrible person.
here's why I think that even though Michelle doesn't like politics, here's why I think that she would consider it. Because I think that the Trump presidency, if Trump wins another 4 years, the Obama legacy is dead in the water.
It's already dead.
I don't think that would motivate her to run. We got a minute left. I think the only thing that will motivate her to run is a complete and utter collapse by the Democratic Party. That's the only thing that
would motivate her. Well, basically, you're saying next week.
So you're saying a brokered convention, she comes in.
I think she would consider it.
That's a possibility.
I'm sorry. East Cleveland will have a higher GDP than Beachwood before that happens.
East Cleveland will get a Starbucks before that happens.
She is not running, man.
Starbucks.
She is not
going to
put that $60 million aside to run for office. She's not.
Last words, Darvio.
I don't know how to follow that. Good show, everyone.
Listen,
Mike Tyson will host the next Miss USA pageant before that will happen.
Folks, we are what we continue.
OJ will be a guest judge.
Get us out of here, Todd. Get us out of here.
I got nothing, folks. Till next time, you're listening to the Todd Allen Show.
The FCB Radio Network. First-class broadcasting worldwide.